Current State on 90.5 WKAR. A young Michigan native is a new Rhodes Scholar. 21-year-old Aaron Robertson of Redford Township is a senior attending Princeton. He's one of 32 American recipients of that Rhodes Scholarship. And according to a news release, Mr. Robertson is concentrating in Italian and pursuing a certificate in African American Studies. He's received two departmental prizes at Princeton and at Oxford. He plans to pursue a Master of Philosophy degree in Modern Languages. Aaron Robertson of Redford Township off to England to study for a couple of years. It's Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. In the nearly 2 weeks since the presidential election, many students at Michigan State University and other young people have voiced alarm about the incoming Trump administration. College students in particular have been outspoken about Trump's election, especially about his fiery campaign rhetoric that threatened to ban Muslims and build a wall at the border with Mexico. It might be easy to overlook that there are Trump supporters on the MSU campus who look forward to the next 4 years. To hear their thoughts on the sometimes noisy reaction to Donald Trump's election, and to get their thoughts on some of the moves announced so far by Mr. Trump, we welcome two of his supporters from the MSU community. First, Assistant Professor Joseph Guzman teaches in MSU's School of Human Resources and Labor Relations. He also served as a statewide co-chair for Mr. Trump's Michigan campaign and has been a member of Trump's National Hispanic Advisory Committee. Professor Guzman, good to meet you.
Good morning.
Also joining us, the chair of the MSU College Republicans, Jeff Litton. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
What year are you in, and what are you studying here at Michigan State?
I am a fourth year here at Michigan State, and I'm studying political theory and constitutional democracy and theater.
Okay. Oh, interesting combination. Professor Guzman, talk to us a little bit about how your support for Donald Trump took shape. How and when did you feel yourself becoming a Donald Trump supporter?
Oh, that's a great question. So I've been a Republican for a long time. I support the Republican platform. And so I was excited when we had election season come along. And it was just amazing to see Mr. Trump go through the primaries and go through all the candidates and come out on top. And so I became more active toward the time of the state convention, the Michigan State Convention. And, of course, supported him ever since.
What about you, Jeff?
I've always believed no matter what, you support the Republican nominee. That's your duty.
Did you vote for him in the primary?
No, okay. Not in the primary. I will say that I wasn't supporting him at first. I was supporting a different candidate. But once we got to the convention, it was time to come home.
Do you mind sharing who it was you voted for in the primary?
I voted for Marco Rubio. But okay. I did support Carly Fiorina before that.
What about you, Professor Guzman? Did you vote for Mr. Trump in the primary?
I voted for Mr. Trump in the primary, but initially I was supporting Jeb Bush.
Describe Mr. Trump's appeal, though, here. You talked about the platform, Joe. What resonates most for you about Donald Trump, Jeff Litton?
I think the most resonating part of his platform and his campaign was just the economics. That's the most important issue to me, is all about economics. How are we going to pay for the future? Because we as the millennial generation are the future, and we are the ones that are going to be reaping all of the problems that the current generation has put on us through these last 8 years of the administration. And we just want a new tax plan, a new where we're going to support businesses to give us jobs, because the job rate for millennials is so low and there's nothing being done to get us to be the ones that are going to be hired. And that's the most important thing.
What about you, Professor Guzman? What single item on the agenda resonated most with you?
Well, dealing with the established interests that have D.C. broken, and that have captured a lot of what our legislatures do as well. So kind of wiping the slate clean and not having, not favoring any particular established interest, but working for the people, I think was a strong message from Mr. Trump, in addition to the change message that Jeff Litton mentioned. So.
We did talk about some of the negative reaction here, which we've seen in East Lansing, we've seen around Michigan. Much of that has come from racial or ethnic minorities about fears of harassment or violence because of the Trump campaign's rhetoric and some priorities. Just one of them from a week before the election involved a torched black church in Mississippi where the words "Vote Trump" were painted on the wall. What do you make of incidents like that that we've been hearing about?
Well, I don't know that we can associate all of those incidences with Mr. Trump. We know, for example, wasn't it North Carolina that Trump campaign headquarters were also torched? Of course, no violence on any level is acceptable. But I think that Mr. Trump is a president for all Americans. I do not believe that he is prejudiced in any way. He hires people from all backgrounds. He judges people on their merits, and that's about what I can say about that.
Jeff Litton, how have you processed some of these violent incidents in particular that critics associate with supporters of Donald Trump or Mr. Trump himself?
I think everybody throughout, there's such a diverse America that people are going to react to different things differently, and that they're, you, no matter who supporters are, if you want to classify them as supporters in that committing these acts of violence, which are despicable, if you're going to classify them as supporters, then that's what the media does. That it's not like we can't stop that. I wouldn't classify them directly with the campaign or the new Trump administration because that's not what he stands for and that's not what he goes for. If you look at the interview he was given right after the election, he said, stop committing acts of violence in my name. That is not what we are about. We're going to move forward and we're going to find a solution to all the problems.
It would seem like, though, that appeal has possibly fallen on deaf ears. I'll point out that some of these incidents are happening here in Michigan. The Detroit Free Press reports that the Michigan Department of Civil Rights says there were 30, quote, hate incidents, unquote, in the 10 days after the election, and ordinarily there'd be 6 to 8. If these incidents aren't coming from Mr. Trump or his supporters, why are more of these things happening? Mr. Guzman, any thoughts?
Why are the incidents up? Well, you have a divided electorate. You have continued activity to meant to generate responses after the election, people, I guess, are agitated. But I know Mr. Trump has not called for any of this. I haven't seen anything official through any element of the party. I wouldn't have anything to do with it. I wouldn't have anything to do with any party that did that. I haven't seen any sentiment that way in the circles that we see. It's just not who we are.
Jeff, you assign some of this to the media here. Have we dropped the ball here in some way? If so, how?
I think the media definitely, if we look at this election, it's one of the most dividing elections that America has seen in decades. And I do attribute the media to helping this because they only ever like to focus on negative aspects of any candidate. No matter if it's one side or the other, it's always a negative side. Nobody ever wants to look at positives of either candidate, and that's the major problem. And if we look at we see the hate happening on one side, but we also see it on the other side still after the election. If we look here at Michigan State's campus, we've had conservative students targeted in their classrooms in the last week. I had one person come up and tell me that the day after their class was canceled for their normal class, like, assignment, and they were told, your new assignment for a non-social science class is to find a way for Mr. Trump not to be the next president of the United States. Mm-hmm.
We're talking with two members of the MSU community, both of whom supported Donald Trump. Joe Guzman is an associate professor in the Department of Human Resources and Labor Studies. Jeff Litton is chair of the MSU College Republicans. Joe Guzman, I'd like to ask you about the attitudes toward Donald Trump in the Latino community. How would you describe those?
Well, it's really interesting. There was a study released by the Pew Research Center in August that looked at attitudes toward Mr. Trump. And the big dividing line was where they received their media. So if they received media from the Spanish-speaking outlets, their support for Mr. Trump was 10 to 15%, over 10, but under 15%. And if they received their media from English-speaking outlets, they were, even if they were bilingual in either side, they were their support was on the order of 40%. And there was a lot of the polls and pollsters and polling interests that were scoffing at those numbers. But that's sort of what we saw in the election. The aggregate there was between somewhere between 29 and 30, 31% put together. So there are mixed views. There is a substantial Latino component that supported Mr. Trump. And without it, we don't know what the outcome might have been. It was substantial.
Jorge Ramos, the Univision news anchor, told a New York Times reporter when they were talking about Latino support for Donald Trump, quote, "We're seeing a new divide within the Hispanic community. The wall that Trump was talking about is clearly apparent now within the Hispanic community." Do you generally agree with that or disagree with that?
No, not at all. I think the very statement is divisive. I think that again, we started talking about the media and the messaging and the attacks. I don't want to rehash the campaign, okay, but broadly speaking, the attacks on Mr. Trump are personal, not on his policies. And there was a kind of a cult of umbrage and resentment that was built up around Mr. Trump when people don't really know his policies. There were some other studies that were done that laid out the policies of both candidates without assigning names. And even among those who had negative attitudes toward the candidates, toward Mr. Trump, they favored his policies. So again, the attacks were meant to divide people based on personal issues rather than looking at the substance of what they were presenting in their platform.
Jeff Litton, a couple of nights after the election, a number of MSU students took to the streets. It was, I think they took some care to say this was not an anti-Trump demonstration, but they said it was a love over hate demonstration or words to that effect. What would you say to some of those protesters who took to the streets two nights after the election?
I think they have the right. Under the First Amendment, you have a right to protest, but that they for the most part, did keep it civil. And that was good, but it did end up becoming an anti-Trump demonstration. And there's a lot of anti-Trump demonstrations just happening around the country where they're saying either not my president or any of these aspects, but we need to move forward. We need to start moving forward. We're going to have grievances. We're going to have disputes, and we're not going to agree with each other. But we need to move forward and look forward, because if we continue to look on today, then none of the issues that they want to see solved or that we want to see solved is going to be solved.
Some number of people, I think more often Democrats, have said Mr. Trump should say more about this. You pointed out that at one point he said, hey, stop this. And several have said that really this amounts to an opportunity for Mr. Trump to bring Americans together. If you were advising his campaign, would you say, hey, take advantage of this opportunity, say stop a little bit more often, and leverage this as an opportunity to bring Americans together? Is there an opportunity there, Joe?
I think that most of the protests we've seen and most of the activity we've seen are not from Trump supporters. It's from Trump detractors and from those who supported his opponent. And I think if anyone should be speaking, it should be his opponent and the president, and shouldn't be encouraging more protests. Mr. Trump is going
to... You feel they're encouraging those?
Well, I don't know if you heard President Obama's comments from Germany, but he said that protests are necessary and they should continue. So, yes, I think they are. And they're certainly not discouraging them. And In Mr. Trump's case, I think he's going to, as he always does, he's going to let actions and outcomes speak for him, and that's what he's going to do.
You're studying the Constitution, Jeff Litton. I'm sure you think about this. What kind of relations do you expect between the Trump administration and the Congress? Clearly, here are two institutions that are going to be connected for the next 4 years. What are you anticipating there? What needs to happen?
It's funny. My professor would want me to say that the president over the last 16 years has taken over control and the Congress doesn't really have any control anymore. And that's what we see as a people. But what I see, I think there's going to be a big relationship between them, because as they are Republican majorities in Congress and the Republican president, it's going to show, just like we saw in 2008 when there was a Democratic president and Democratic majorities in Congress, a lot happened. A lot did happen. And I think a lot is going to happen again, because we're going to see many things that all Republicans agree on: tax reform, immigration reform, all these things that need to happen. And they're going to start moving forward, because we now have, like, it's the majority. And I do see a relationship happening.
We've been talking with two members of the MSU community, both supporters of Donald Trump. Joe Guzman is an associate professor in the Department of Human Resources and Labor Studies. Jeff Litton is chair of the MSU College Republicans. Thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up on Current State, Michigan State University's College of Osteopathic Medicine is opening a medical clinic on Detroit's east side, a clinic that's been shut down since its founder died last year. We'll talk with Dean William Strample and with Dr. Derek Williamson, who will serve as medical director at the Popoff Clinic. That's later this hour on Current State. Economic developers say the mid-Michigan economy has an abundance of high-wage, high-demand job openings in the STEAM fields that employers are eager to fill. To attract new talent to these jobs, Capital Area IT Council and the Capital Area Michigan Works are hosting a networking event this Wednesday for Michiganders returning for the Thanksgiving holiday. There will be a few of those. The event is called Capital Comeback. It'll take place at the Broad Museum in East Lansing. Joining us, one of the organizers and program manager for the Arts Council of Greater Lansing, Josh Holliday. Hi, Josh.
How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
We are well. Thank you for being here. Also with us, a Michigander who moved away from the region and then moved back, Laura de la Rambouillet. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Josh, the main objective of Capital Comeback is to attract people to these jobs. How connect the dots for us? How do you think that'll happen?
Yeah, so the event takes place the day before Thanksgiving, which is known as the biggest bar day of the year,
right,
as social event of the year. And so we are encouraging former mid-Michigan residents to come back, discover what is happening in Lansing. And so come to the Broad. There's going to be 12 to 15 corporate recruiters and different employees from these corporations that will be in attendance, that those attending will be able to meet and learn more about job opportunities, urban living opportunities here in Lansing, and why it's a great place to live.
And some of the people attending are the companies with the job openings that need filling?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. These are jobs primarily, I take it, in the STEAM fields. That's science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. Can you go a little deeper and tell us what the nature of these jobs are? I've always been led to believe there's always some number of IT jobs open in Lansing.
Yes, we have a large number of IT jobs available in the area. Insurance, we have several insurance hubs, so a lot of jobs within the insurance field, as well as the arts and cultural sector within economic development and finance. So we have a plethora of career opportunities, but this really stemmed out of a STEAM initiative, because there are many STEAM jobs, and we want to make sure that people realize that Lansing's a global community and has global job opportunities for people from all across the country.
Laura, you're from Kalamazoo originally, and you attended MSU, but your work took you away. Tell us a little bit more about where you lived and what work you did after college.
Well, when I graduated from MSU in 2003, I was ready to fly. I wanted to see the world. So I moved out to Washington, D.C., went to graduate school at American University, obtained my master's degree, and while I was there, I started interning at the U.S. Department of State. I interned overseas at the embassy in Warsaw, loved it, and wanted to get into the Foreign Service. So after I graduated, I applied for the Foreign Service. And something I've always said, I speak frequently with students and young people in the area, and I say, you know, sometimes failure isn't a bad thing. I didn't end up getting into the Foreign Service, but I did get a presidential management fellowship that allowed me to be a civil servant and rotated through several positions in the Department of State, and then eventually ended up working on international human rights issues.
And you moved back to mid-Michigan to be closer to your family after your mother had a health scare. Were you concerned about finding a job when you moved back?
Initially, I was, but I also was fortunate that I still had a great network here in mid-Michigan. My sister still lives here in the area. My best friends from undergrad still live in the area. And they kept telling me, move back. You can do it. You've got support here. We'll find you a position. Just talk to people. Talk to MSU. Talk to the Alumni Association. And so that's what I did. I started networking as soon as I actually came back over Thanksgiving at one point. And when my husband went to talk to the MBA program here at MSU, I started talking to other people about what can I do in changing my career, because obviously I can't work at the UN from Lansing.
Very interesting. And you work in public health now.
Yes.
Talk to us about that transition.
Well, my work took me into working on the disparities that you find in human rights around the world. And so disparities occur everywhere in the world, including in our own country. And so the work that I was doing, focusing on trying to rectify disparities in human rights, translated easily into the work that I do in trying to reduce disparities in tobacco control.
And that's specifically what you're involved in now.
That is what I'm involved in now.
I'm speaking with Michigander Laura de la Rambouillet, who moved back to mid-Michigan, moved away and then back. We're discussing an upcoming event called Capital Comeback Wednesday at the Broad Art Museum, designed to showcase Greater Lansing and inform people of the many career opportunities here. Josh Holliday also joins us. Josh is program manager for the Arts Council of Greater Lansing. Josh, talk to us about what you think it takes to attract and retain talent to Lansing or to mid-Michigan.
Yeah, so for Lansing, we want to make sure that people understand that we have urban living opportunities, because this younger demographic of young professionals and millennials are looking for urban living opportunities. They're looking for arts and cultural attractive events and happenings. They're looking for great food. And Lansing has that. We're growing and seeing so much more of that pop up. But then they're also looking for the job. It's a combination of all of these coming together, and that's what we're looking to showcase at this event.
Anything you'd add to that list, Laura?
I think the thing I would add is that there are so many opportunities to plug into the region. You know, it's remarkable here, having lived elsewhere, that people don't automatically say no to you here. If you have an idea and you don't see something happening and you say to a couple friends, hey, we don't have this here. Do you think we could make it happen? People want to make those things happen here, and they try to work to support one another to make it happen instead of just saying, oh, that's not possible. That's too expensive. Or Lansing, that's not for Lansing. Or, that's only for a big city. That sort of thing just really doesn't happen here. It's very much a can-do attitude in the area, and I feel that it's rooted in the university being here, the culture of an international culture here, and a deep culture of volunteerism in the area.
Josh, there will be about a dozen companies and organizations at Capital Comeback. Can you tell us more about them?
Yeah, so companies are signing up as we go, so the list is ever increasing. Several of them, I think Neogen, MSU Federal Credit Union, Auto Owners Insurance, that's just to name a few. But if you go on our Facebook page and several online sources, you can find more information about the companies that are confirming as they come in.
Laura, what would you say to someone who is considering moving back to the area?
I would say explore it. Start talking to people. Reach out. Just talk to strangers even when you go out and you're out for dinner or you're out at a bar. Talk to your family, because a lot of the time there are opportunities that are waiting for you, but the people you know back home don't even know that you're open to those opportunities, so they don't even mention them to you. So it just start the conversation, and you don't have to make it public. Don't put it on Facebook. Don't worry about telling your current employer that you're even considering it. That's not the point. It's just to start building your network here, because if you already grew up here or you went to school here, you've already got that network here in place. You just need to tap into it.
I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge kind of the change in recent years at the MSU Alumni Association, because I know Scott Westerman has made this network for life idea a centerpiece for how he operates. It's mm-hmm. like if you know a Spartan anywhere, lean on him. And I think Scott has tried to cultivate that, and it would appear to be paying some dividends here. Josh, we've had folks from the Arts Council of Greater Lansing on the show before to talk about your various programs. Remind us what the organization does.
Yeah, we are a membership and service organization that represents the arts and cultural organizations and artists in the region. So organizations such as the Broad, Wharton Center here on campus, to the Lansing Art Gallery and the Lansing Symphony. And then we have over 150 artists and creatives that are making our community unique and vibrant. And so that's how we come to the table. We come to the table as ambassadors for creative placemaking in the region, and we believe that is a key part in bringing people back to Lansing, as there's many opportunities that make this feel like the big city that we see across the country.
Mm-hmm. I've been speaking with the program manager for the Arts Council of Greater Lansing, Josh Holliday, also Michigander Laura de la Rambouillet, who moved back to mid-Michigan after moving away. We've been discussing Capital Comeback, which takes place this Wednesday at the Broad Museum from 6 to 8 p.m. So many people are out already. You figure, why not stop by there if you're coming back and maybe you're at a transition phase in your life?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The link to register for the event will be up on our website later today. That's at WKAR.org. Josh, Laura, thank you. Continued success.
Thank you very much.
Coming up on Current State, the MSU football and men's basketball teams were both involved in one-point games over the weekend. One squad lost, the other wiped its brow in victory. Current Sports host Al Martin will have a full recap of those barn burners, as well as an update as to how the Detroit Lions pulled off a win as well against Jacksonville yesterday. That's on the way on Current State. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Last year, a medical clinic on the east side of Detroit closed when founder Dr. Michael Popoff died. Next week, the facility will reopen, providing services again to a part of the city that badly needs it. The Michigan State University College of Osteopathic Medicine will run the clinic, providing care to Detroiters and additional experience to the college's students. To learn more about the importance of the clinic to Detroiters and to the MSU College of Osteopathic Medicine, we welcome the college's Dean William Strample. Welcome to Current State, sir.
Thank you, Mark.
Also here, an alumnus of the college, Dr. Derek Williamson, who will be running the facility. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Dr. Michael Popoff operated this clinic for 47 years before his death in 2015. What can you tell us about his career and his connection to Detroit?
Well, he obviously was integral to Detroit. He worked on Mack Avenue for all those years, and his family built and maintained that clinic. And when they approached me, Linda, his wife and his daughter, they really wanted something to be done. They originally were going to give us the property, and I originally thought that we would take the property, appraise it, and sell it. But then circumstances came, and serendipity, actually. And I ran into Dr. Williamson, and he had a big interest because he's a longtime Detroiter and was working in a suburb of Detroit, and he was interested. So suddenly I took it to the next level, and we accepted the clinic as a donation to the university, and then we put some renovations in it, and we're going to open it again.
What impact did the closure of this clinic have on residents, Dr. Williamson?
Well, in terms of the residents itself, The surrounding area is the depressed part of Detroit. And unfortunately, the death of Dr. Popoff limited the health, or should I say healthcare access, for a lot of individuals in that surrounding area. So by having this clinic open, it's going to present a plus for the surrounding residents to have access to quality healthcare.
Have patients that worked with the clinic in the past, had they gone without care? Have they had to travel distances to get care? How did they respond to this when the clinic was closed?
Well, I can tell you this: the current staff that was employed by the Popoffs, who maintain the clinic, have said that many patients have come up to the clinic looking for a physician or waiting for a physician. I think they actually, Ms. Popoff, had a physician to work in the clinic for short periods of time to try to maintain it. But so far, that hasn't continued. So we were fortunate enough, Michigan State was fortunate enough to acquire the clinic. So, you know, our goal is to bring back quality health care to that area.
Are there particular types of medicine that are especially important in that area?
Well, I believe primary care is most key, because many of the population there are elderly, and they don't have the access to transportation like you and I take for granted. If they can't walk to it or come by bus, it gets very difficult for them. So we want to open that clinic as a primary care access lane for young people, but also for the aged population that need help around that area to make sure they see somebody about their basic health care needs.
You've also said that there could be an emphasis on prenatal issues, OBGYN services as well.
Yeah, I think originally we will start with the primary care, but I plan to expand that operation as we see what the patient clientele and the people we attract. If we have it, we may have, we could bring in a nurse practitioner, and I'm talking to the College of Nursing about that possibility too. And we could expand it even to some mental health services, depending on what Derek tells me after he's fully operational there for a couple of months.
The Popoff Clinic on Detroit's east side will open next week under the guidance of the MSU College of Osteopathic Medicine. Students will learn there, and Detroiters will begin receiving medical care again. We're talking with Dean William Strample and the medical director of the Popoff Clinic, opening on the 29th, Dr. Derek Williamson. Dean Strample referred to upgrades. What kind of shape was this in after it was had been closed for a while? Did it need upgrades?
Yes, it did. It was in poor. It was actually deteriorating. I mean, it was poor quality in terms of the actual structure of the building. And after the upgrades, I mean, the quality of the building has really been, in terms of the renovation, has really improved the ability to maintain the standard of a the type of clinic that anybody would want to come to. I mean, there've been improvements such as technology for computer systems now with the EHR, the EMR for medical care. We're bringing in new equipment for testing modalities in terms of patient care. I mean, it's been really improved.
What, Dean Strample, what will an MSU medical student derive from an opportunity to work in the clinic?
Well, my school, I basically want my students involved with patients early in their medical career, and I like them to see the basic primary care model. So as many students as we can have exposed to Dr. Williamson and the patient population, we're not turning the students loose to provide care independently, but they will certainly observe Dr. Williamson and be there, and so any contact they have improves what I believe their outcome in medicine in the future.
What will the role of the Detroit Wayne County Health Authority be here, Dr. Williamson?
Well, one of the things we're doing through the authority health is providing residents for training in terms of teaching. It has a community base, so they're going to actually get training in the primary care setting. So we get a chance to see what the type of patients that we see on an outpatient basis. I mean, we get the immediate patient that walks in, like off the street, or we get the patient that has the appointment who's continuing care. So basically, I mean, that's the type of individuals that we will be dealing with. But we'll be getting a stream of different residents, like Dr. Dean Schrample said. Possibly later on, we'll be getting different other specialties in, such as psych or even, OB into that clinic.
You'd like to do that, then? You'd like to expand the services?
Wayne County Health Authority, when we started the 85 residencies down in Detroit, Michigan State University and the College of Osteopathic Medicine is directly involved with sponsoring those 85 residents. So downtown Detroit, we helped open those with the Wayne County Health Authority and the HRSA grant. So that's all. We've been down there in Detroit for the last several years. So this is a natural to expand our influence with those residents in the Wayne County Health Authority. That's all part of Michigan State already to do that.
This will be this will become MSU's first clinic outside the Lansing area. How important is that? What significance does that have?
I think that's really important. I mean, down in the Detroit area, to actually, have a foothold. I mean, here up in Lansing, MSU is prevalent, but down in Detroit, this is a new venture. I think it's really significant, especially with the growth and the resurgence of Detroit and all the new development that's going on down there.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a benefit.
What would you add to that, Dr. Strample?
Well, Michigan State University is a university for the state of Michigan. We tend to, because we live around the Lansing area, is here. But I have three campuses. I have one in Macomb. I have one downtown Detroit at the Detroit Medical Center and here in Lansing. So Michigan State University has always been a university for the state of Michigan. In fact, we have operations for the university, I believe, in every county in the state of Michigan. Hmm.
Is there a likelihood that more of these will follow?
There could be. I want to see like this. I don't want to make a thing to say, gee, we got one, let's try three before I see how this works. If you ask me that question in 6 months, I'd have a better idea of the likelihood of that.
What's the connection to the college to outside of Michigan? Does it have a profile outside the state of Michigan?
My college?
Yeah.
We're ranked by U.S. News and World Report as one of the top 10, top 10% of all medical schools for primary care. That's both MD and DO schools nationwide. That was in March of last year was the last rating, but we've been continuously in that top 10 for the last 15 years. So, yeah, we have a national profile as far as primary care in this state and outside this state and nation internationally, too.
Dr. Williamson, what's your take on the quality and the availability of medical care in the greater Detroit area? Do you have a take on that? I mean, the further you get away from the Popoff Clinic, what's it like?
What's different? The Popoff Clinic is in an underserved area, so it has a special quality to it. When you start getting out into the tri-county areas, the suburbs like West Bloomfield, Southfield, it's different. I mean, the type of clientele that you get there, the type of patients that you get there, I mean, they have easier access to health care in terms of transportation. I mean, it's not an issue.
What about hospitals?
Well, yeah, a lot of the hospitals are based out there. You've got the St. John's system, you've got Providence in the suburbs, you've got Beaumont. You got different hospitals, but just in the inner city, the main one is DMC, which is basically like Harper Receiving Children's. So those are the hospitals in that vicinity. You also have St. John's Hospital, which is over on Mack in Maross area. But other than that, those are basically a lot of the hospitals in those areas have closed.
You must be excited about reopening this.
I am.
Talk to us about how you feel about that. It's the 29th, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's the 29th. It's a work in progress. it's a challenge.
It's a challenge, but an exciting challenge.
It is. I thought we'd be open actually before this, but we had to renovate. When we got into the rafters, we had to replace that. I didn't want to have a building that didn't make Michigan State University proud, so we're making it be a Michigan State University operation, but keeping the Popoff legacy intact on this issue.
The MSU College of Osteopathic Medicine next week will reopen an important clinic on the east side of Detroit. The Popoff Clinic closed last year when its founder, Dr. Michael Popoff, died. Dr. Derek Williamson will serve as medical director, and we've also been talking with the dean of the college, William Strample. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the MSU football team may not be too disappointed in the way they competed against the number two team in the nation Saturday afternoon. The 3-8 Spartans lost by just a point against the Ohio State Buckeyes. Speaking of 1 point, the MSU men's basketball team was also involved in a nail biter last night against Florida Gulf Coast. They squeaked out 78-77 win at the Breslin Center, a game that many didn't expect to be close. Current sports host Al Martin joins us for a recap, and we'll touch on the Lions, too. What a crazy weekend.
As you just stated before we took the air just now, Mark, I mean, it seems like it gets crazier and crazier every Monday I come on this show. Unbelievable, right? Yeah,
more teams and more sports to involve in the craziness as
so
we get
true.
Further into the basketball
yes.
season. Well, a loss is a loss, but, you know, in reference to the way MSU competed against the Buckeyes. Does that help the morale of the team with just a game left to go?
You know, a loss is never a good thing, though, Mark, at the end of the day. And you know the old adage in sports, you know, there is no such thing as moral victories. That was kind of the theme of that press conference after Michigan State walked off that football field with just a 1 point loss against the number three college football team in the nation. You know, we talked with Demetrius Cox, we chatted with Josiah Price, and Mark D'Antonio and Dave Warner even mentioned how even though they did lose this game, the fact that they were in it, the fact that they competed, shows a lot about where this team can be in recent years, more specifically next year, because we saw a lot of freshmen step up in big moments. And that defense, which has a lot of young pups on it, Mark, the fact that they held that Ohio State offense to just 17 points is pretty impressive. So, again, a loss never feels good, and they certainly felt the sting of that walking off that field for the last time this season on Saturday afternoon. But at the same time, you pushed OSU to the brink and almost a huge upset.
And they went for the win.
They did.
And it was the game plan of Coach D'Antonio from the get-go.
Exactly.
If we get in a position to win the game, and this helps explain the decision to go for two in the fourth quarter. What did you make of that?
Oh, I thought it was a great decision. And for those that criticize and say that wasn't a good decision to go for 2 points and, you know, take the points and possibly go to overtime, it's crazy. Because Michigan State, this is a team that has nothing to lose at that point in the year, Mark. I mean, they're a 3-win football team, for goodness sake. There's not like they're competing to win their respective division or for a bowl game. Why not go for two? You know, you've been down and out all season. The decision for going for two is not what I criticize. It's the play call that is what a lot of people, I feel, are puzzled about, Mark. I mean, you have L.J. Scott, who had been a complete stud the entire game. I mean, you look at his numbers. Scott had 160 yards, 8.4 yards per carry, 19 attempts, 2 catches for 76 yards. We remember that the second play of the game where L.J. goes 60-plus yards for the TD. I mean, he was absolutely unbelievable there, and he's the one who actually scored the TD to set up that 2-point conversion, and you don't go back to him. I was a bit puzzled with that. And Tyler O'Connor, of course, throws a pick in the end zone, and it sort of takes the air out of the balloon. So if anything, you don't question going for two there, but you do scratch your head about the play call. I will say that.
What are the chances MSU can close the season with a win at Penn State? They've surprised a lot of people.
It's going to be very tough. And the fact that they were competitive against Ohio State, if you're a Spartan fan, you have to be feeling pretty good right now. But it gets really interesting now in the Big Ten East specifically, Mark, because Penn State, you know, this is a team that needs a win over Michigan State, and they need an Ohio State victory over Michigan on Saturday to punch his ticket to Indy, which is pretty crazy if you ask me, because if you remember at the beginning of the year, well, earlier on in the year, I should say, Penn State actually topped OSU, so they have that head-to-head win. Now, you know, Penn State, they lost to Pat Narduzzi's Pitt Panthers. We saw Pitt, of course, upset Clemson earlier this season, which is crazy. So that, and shout out to Pat Narduzzi, right? I mean, I think there's a lot of Spartan fans wishing he was still the defensive coordinator for this team, right?
Right.
But yeah, he's doing a great job there. But Penn State, I mean, you know, since that loss, the Nittany Lions have won 7 in a row for the first time since 2011. You look at QB, Trace McSorley. He's been efficient. He's completing over 50% of his passes. Saquon Barkley, running back. Now, Saquon did go out this past weekend, and he was tested in that game against Rutgers for a concussion. But if he's ready to go this weekend against Michigan State, I mean, he's a guy who can really tear it up. He has rushed for 1,205 yards, 105.9 yards per game, and 14 TDs. He's always a threat. So I think it will be competitive, but it's so tough to beat Penn State on the road this season. I think Penn State is favored right now at 13, and I think that's a pretty good line if you ask me.
Let's shift gears to hoops. The MSU men welcomed Florida Gulf Coast to the Breslin Center. We barely escaped with a win. A surprising letdown for you, Al. What do you make of it?
Well, when you look, that game had a crazy finish, Mark. I mean, going back and forth and back and forth. And I think what you're seeing, especially what you saw last night against Florida Gulf Coast, is that they expose MSU when it comes to its size. We've seen MSU sort of treading water at the early part of the year when it comes to the absences of Ben Carter and Gavin Schilling, that when, you know, that news broke before the season even began that those two bodies won't be present, at least until Big Ten play for Gavin Schilling. But Florida Gulf Coast came in with a great game plan. They utilized their big men better than any team we've seen Michigan State play so far, I think. I mean, if you look at Simmons last night, he had 18 points. Kenny Goins wasn't even in the building. I mean, he finishes with a donut in the stat column. That was very surprising to me. But Aaron Harris finally showed up. You know, I had called out Aaron Harris on Current Sports, you know, when he went to Madison Square Garden, and when they took on Kentucky, it looked like his body went to New York, but his mind was still here in EL. He finally showed up because he's, to me, is the X factor of this team. Aaron Harris, 10 of 15, 6 of 6 from the three-point line, Mark, 31 points. Even with that being said, though, Florida Gulf Coast was still in this game, and a wild finish. You know, for those that saw it, I mean, you had Florida Gulf Coast down by 1 point. Seconds remaining on the clock. They have to go full court to try and get a good shot off. Miles Bridges ends up blocking the inbounds, and it hits out of bounds at first. I thought more time should have came off the clock
and
there.
Yeah.
They didn't review that, though, because from the time it hits his paw to the time it hits the out of bounds, I mean, they should have took more time off the clock if you ask me. Nonetheless, Florida Gulf Coast, you know, a great inbound. It goes the full length of the floor, almost like a touchdown pass almost. The clock starts as the ball is flying through the air.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense. And then by the time it gets to the Florida Gulf Coast player on the other end, the buzzer sounds. And I think, you know, he throws up an air ball. I think that buzzer affected the shot, if you ask me, Mark. Now, the referees come out and they make this statement. And to read a quick statement from the referee in this moment, this is a press release that was sent out to media members right after the game. He said, "All four of us have the capability," meaning the officials as well as the timekeeper. When the timing error occurred, it allowed us to utilize the monitor. At that point, we have to determine what's the best play what's the best way to go about this, because the play didn't stop. If that try is released after 1.6, we're going to have to wave it off. If the try is released before 1.6, we are going to count it. So basically, the fact that it was released before 1.6, they have to count it, and time expired right after that shot. Mm. But the fact that the buzzer, I believe, affected the shot, and the fact that you did have this controversy, why not give him another shot at it? If your time isn't with the Spartans, you're wiping your brow and you're saying, okay, let's park our bags to go to the Bahamas, because we clearly had some things to work on as the season moves on. But a controversial moment, to say the least, Mark.
The team is off to the Bahamas, where they're back in tournament action here. We'll play St. John's on Wednesday. We have just about 30 seconds left, though, Al. Let's talk about this Detroit Lions victory yesterday. Another win for the Lions and the Vikings on Thanksgiving Day. Briefly, what do you make of all of it?
In 30 seconds, I tell you what, this team, a crazy stat, in the 10 games they played this season, Mark, they have trailed in the fourth quarter in each of those games. Matthew Stafford led the team to, you know, the 26th game-winning drive of his career on Sunday. They're playing with fire, and they're right on the edge of the cliff here. But so that's a catch-22, but you can never count the Lions out, no matter what the score is going into the fourth. A big division game, though. Two teams that lead the NFC North, in the Vikings and the Lions. I can't remember a Thanksgiving game that means this much to the Lions in quite some time.
Al Martin, every weekday at 1 on AM 870, it's Current Sports. Thanks, Al.
Thank you, Mark.
That's our show for today. Tomorrow on Current State, America's preparing for a new political era, with the GOP controlling the White House and both chambers of Congress. In Michigan, Democrats are reassessing their identity and trying to regroup for the 2018 midterm election. We'll talk with Chairman Brandon Dillon about the future for Democrats in Michigan. We're also in the midst of firearm deer hunting season, and the city of East Lansing and MSU are counting deer in local parks to see how large the herd is and monitor its health. I'll talk with East Lansing Environmental Services Administrator Kathy DeChambeau and Department of Public Works intern Sarah Plantrick about their work. That and more tomorrow on Current State. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Wharf. Kevin Labrie directed the show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Katie Cook, Jamie Paisley, Brooke Allen, and to Drew Hill, and to Isaac Constant sitting in for Drew today. The Current State podcast, informative, insightful, indispensable with what's happening around mid-Michigan and beyond. Catch it at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We hope to see you Tuesday. Have a great day. It's Current State on WKAR.